Welcome to the Red and Bold Show. This is where you find at the intersection of 49ers Cutback and 49ers Camelot. You'll find the Red and Bold Show, and we are excited to be here. This is Anthony Robertson. My name's Mark Adams, and we're thrilled to have you join us today. What's up, Ant? How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Lots of stuff going on in free agency with the 49ers. 49ers essentially making some big moves. And, you know, this is the first time I've actually gotten to talk about it. I've had a busy week personally, so that doesn't afford me the opportunity to talk during the free agency frenzy. So I'm really excited to get into this. This is the first time that I'm actually going to get to talk about the moves, and I get to do it with you. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I know this is going to be a great episode. So everyone, please buckle in and enjoy this crossover. It's always a great event when we get together and do the Red and Bold Show.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. The first thing that we have to do is thank Eric Armstead for his 9 seasons as a San Francisco 49er. He was released just about an hour ago. Less than an hour ago. So he's probably going to be ending up somewhere else. He's the guy who, remember when his first few years, he was hurt a lot. I mean, that's the way it was here at the end, but those first few years, we really got, like, 49ers fans weren't real happy with Eric Armstead, but he turned into a really good player.
Yeah, he's had a huge change in position just his whole entire career with the 49ers. You mentioned the injuries. That was big. But also, he was drafted to play 5 tech in a 3-4 defense that the 49ers ran here. And then when we got the changeover, then he moved outside and played defensive end. And then it wasn't until after that 2019 season that he moved inside. They really needed him inside with some of the injuries. And that's where I felt like became the best Eric Armstead that we saw. Now, of course, in 2019, he does have a great season because DeForest Buckner, you know, Dee Ford and Nick Bosa helped. And they had that NASCAR where they moved him inside. And it was great. Since then, he's been a solid defensive player, a leader on the football team. He's going to be sorely missed. And this is a player that I've literally seen play since high school. My friend coached against him when he was at Pleasant Grove and Elk Grove. So this is a guy that I've seen mature, grow, and he's a fantastic human being and a fantastic player. And now he's going to land somewhere else. I wish the best for him because I think he's a good guy. But I think this was a change the 49ers needed to make because of salary cap reasons. And they've done a pretty good job of making sure that they're going to be capable of fulfilling the role that's being left by the blueprint, Eric Armstead.
Yeah, it really is a sad time whenever we see players, especially players like Armstead, who's been around for a while. I mean, we faced this last year when Jimmy Ward left. And so it's always kind of sad to see those guys that have been around for a long time move on, especially when they're good players and good people. So let's get into some of the moves that the 49ers have made. The first thing that they did is sign Leonard Floyd, the edge rusher. He's been around for a while. He's 31 years old, but he still is pretty effective getting after the quarterback. And the big thing is he doesn't miss games. He hasn't missed in quite a while. So I want to know what you like about Leonard Floyd as a pass rusher, and what do you think he brings as a run defender? And that's going to be there's going to be a theme to this because we did see the 49ers struggle against the run at times this season, especially later in the season. And I think that maybe they've made some moves this week that will help them get better against the run. But what do you think about the Leonard Floyd signing?
Yeah, Leonard Floyd, this is a good move. This is one that I was actually calling for last year. I thought that he's a fit for what San Francisco does. They like to take those 3-4 outside linebackers and convert them to putting their hand in the ground. That's what they did with Samson Ebukam, and he came from that exact same system. So to me, it always was a great fit, and Floyd brings a lot of length. He brings a lot of speed. He's able to bend the corner. He's a guy that can play in space, and you need guys that can win in space, and he can do that. I think Floyd's advantages are more so in pass rush. I think that's where he's really going to be used a lot for the 49ers. They get a guy that can get after the quarterback and get sacks, and it's a model of consistency when you're talking about Floyd. He consistently gets 9-plus sacks over the last 4 years. That's what the 49ers have needed. They have not had a defensive end that could do that in their defense since D. Ford was there with Nick Bosa that rookie season of 2019. They've been searching for it. Ebukam was good, but he was getting 4.5, 5 sacks. Charles Amini, he was good, but he was getting 4.5, 5 sacks. Now they got a potential 10-plus sack guy. Double digits is exactly what you need. I think that will free up Bosa, but also because of his versatility, it will free up some things for him to drop into coverage and things like that. They did late in the season with Chase Young. More freedom and flexibility is always the avenue. Now, when we're talking about run defense, he doesn't set the edge as good as a lot of players. So that would tend you to believe he's more built for obvious pass downs and playing. But I will say this, there has been a lot of conversation about his tackling, but let's remember this is an outside linebacker in a 3-4 defense. There's a lot of times he was put in bad situations in space to make tackles. That's going to be a little bit of a different role for him playing a defensive end, a base defensive end. So everything is more condensed. But I do like his athleticism on the outside. I think he can get better. He just has to learn Chris Kocurek's ways of setting the edge. If he can do it and do it at a high level, I think the 49ers got themselves a really good piece in Leonard Floyd.
Yeah, I agree. I'm happy with the signing. I was hoping for Danielle Hunter, which I thought that he was going to be too expensive. I also was interested in a couple of other guys that I felt like might be a better fit for the 49ers. But I'm still happy with this. I think that they're making themselves better. We've got a couple of people in the chat that have said hi. Josh is in here. Jason, great to see y'all. Thanks for joining us. Another edge rusher that the 49ers added is Yeter Gross-Matos. Now, this is a guy that I have to admit I really don't know much about. They signed him to a 2-year deal. He's younger. Doesn't quite have the name. He's a bigger guy, sometimes even rushes from the inside, the interior of the defensive line. What do you like about him, and is there anything that concerns you about Gross-Matos?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is when I talked edge rushers the 49ers could potentially target, he was one of them that I talked about because I thought he was going to be a cheap option, but a young guy with tremendous upside. And that's what you're looking for. This is eerily similar to Charles Amenihue. Now, Amenihue, we got in a trade, but Gross-Matos is the same sort of thing. He's a bigger guy. He's got the versatility to play outside and in, that Arden Key role the 49ers really like. And if you're going back to kind of the old ways of the 49ers defense, Armstead not being there means you need to have a really good pass rusher. Now, they did make some moves to get good defensive linemen for pass rush, but the 49ers are at their best when they get 4 really solid, fast guys. Now, Hargrave will be the slowest of the 4 because I think Gross-Matos and Leonard Floyd will rush with Bosa and Hargrave. I think this is what they look at. With Gross-Matos, he is good at setting the edge against the run. He needs to get better at bending the corner and getting to the quarterback. But he's going to be playing in a wide 9 now. Could that space be beneficial? It could be. But I see him mostly fitting into that Arden Key role, that Charles Amenihue role, where he plays base downs on the outside and they move him in on obvious pass downs where he can go against guards who aren't as fast, aren't as athletic. And that's when it really puts him in position to be successful and potentially get some quarterback sacks, which the 49ers need from the interior pass rush.
Yeah, I did see that Matt Barrows was saying something very similar to that, that he can see Gross-Matos moving inside on those obvious pass downs. Josh said, Penn State guy they should have taken instead of Jackson. Yeah, what do you think with Drake Jackson? I mean, he's now, when we go into this, is he going to be behind Robert Beal Jr., or do you think that maybe he's going to have the edge there over the second-year guy?
I think it's open competition. I think they're going to come in with those two guys being equal, and they're going to have to scratch and claw for their position. I don't even know if the 49ers are done at edge. I mean, they could address it in the draft and put some pressure. They could bring in another guy in free agency. We just don't know. We do know that the main target for the 49ers was going to be getting this defense reformed, and I think that that's what they're working on. And for Drake Jackson and Robert Beal Jr., it's like put up or shut up. And for Drake Jackson, he's going to year 3. He's really got to prove that he is worth that pick. because he's getting to that point now where they're going to start seeing him as a discardable piece, and that's not what he wants. He's got all the potential in the world, all the athleticism in the world. He should be what Leonard Floyd is, right? That's what they were thinking he was going to develop into, an outside linebacker type with speed, athleticism. He just hasn't materialized. So it's going to be big time for him this season. But I think right now you bring them in, they've both got to earn their way, and we'll see who ends up coming out on the other end. The truth is, depending on what happens in the draft and free agency, they could both be playing for their roster spot. And Drake Jackson or Robert Beal Jr. might not be a 49er come September when it's time to really play the games.
Yeah. CG Ruthless is in here. What's up, CG? Thanks for joining us. Let me ask you this, and you may not want to even answer this question, but I'm just curious. Do you think the 49ers are better with Floyd and Gross Matos than they would have been if they had only signed Danielle Hunter?
With the way that Chris Kocurek plays his defense, I think it's always better to have more. I will say that dynamically, that first team defensive line would have been fantastic with Danielle Hunter. I mean, you look at that guy, he's a top flight talent. He sets the edge better. I thought he was the ultimate fit opposite of Nick Bosa. So I would have loved that move. When you look at the amount of money he got, though, you can't afford to pay Nick Bosa 30 and pay him $25 million per year. So financially, it didn't make sense. $20 million, it got close because you paid these two guys. But the way Chris Kocurek does it with line changes and the way that he consistently plays guys for multiple snaps, I think this is the way they want to go. I think they would have loved to have Danielle Hunter in a perfect world, but this is the way they had to go. Danielle would have been the number one, but this is option two. And this is kind of what we talked about last week, was they probably were going to do some under-the-radar, low-level signings, you know, three or four moves, instead of that one big splash move, because it just made more sense financially, and that's what they did.
Yeah. And we did talk about that last week. Are they going to make a big splash, or are they going to make multiple smaller splashes? And they have chosen that route. I like what Jason Massey wrote here. Give me Bill over Jackson at this point. I would agree, because Bill was the guy who was super athletic but just was raw, where Jackson, we've seen him disappear as the season's gone on, now two seasons in a row. And so for me, I totally would expect, and I agree with you, I think it's going to be an open competition. And I think that Robert Beal Jr. might have the advantage there, because he does have more talent. I mean, Drake Jackson came into camp last year really ready and looking good and looking the part. Three sacks in the first game. Now, I realized that they were more the kind of cleanup sacks, you know, that he got. But, man, I don't like how he's disappeared. Now, he dealt with some injuries, I get that, but I don't like how he's disappeared now his first two seasons. What do you think? I mean, like, you think that if it's an open competition, would you predict Robert Beal, or you think that you think maybe Drake Jackson's going to have the edge just because of his experience?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to who can set the edge in the run game. I know a lot of people are going to look at sacks, look at pressure, but both these guys are fast. They're able to, you know, get around the corner a little bit, but it's really coming down to that. Who can set the edge? And from what I've seen on the limited snaps, 53 snaps for Robert Beal Jr., but he's better right now at setting the edge than Drake Jackson. And Drake Jackson has 2 years in that Chris Kocurek system. That's a thing that scares me, because you can't be a base down defensive end for the 49ers if you can't, you know, consistently set the edge. And Drake Jackson is not a situational pass rusher. He's not good enough at pass rush. So to me, it would appear Robert Beal Jr., if you just looked at the tape, would have the advantage. But well, let's see what Drake Jackson does. I mean, I think he's going to be motivated and pushed against it. He's not given anything this time. Now he's fighting for a roster spot. We'll see. But I would say, yeah, Robert Beal Jr. probably has the advantage.
Yeah. Josh asks, Hunter Renfro a possibility? I just don't know what they're going to do wide receiver wise. I mean, I think that, I don't believe the Deebo Samuel trade rumors. I think that Brandon Ayuk's going to be extended. Juwan Jennings was tendered at a second round amount. I kind of doubt anybody's going to give up a second rounder. So I think that all three of those guys will be back. When it comes to Ronnie Bell, Danny Gray, you know, who knows what's going to happen with those guys, or are they going to try to bring back somebody like Chris Conley, or could they go and get Hunter Renfrow? I mean, would that be a possibility to go and grab somebody like that?
I think Hunter Renfrow is really interesting. I think if Jimmy Garoppolo was the quarterback, Hunter Renfrow made a lot of sense. He liked throwing to those smaller guys who would find little small spaces over the middle of the field. The one thing I will give Renfrow is Kyle Shanahan's going to like him because he's tough. He's gritty. He makes big catches. So that type of thing is big. He's a huge red zone threat. I think the 49ers would be interested. I just don't know what the interest is going to be from Renfrow. A couple of names to keep an eye on as far as wide receivers that are still available in free agency is Van Jefferson, who used to be with the Rams. Kyle Shanahan really liked him in that draft. He still got the speed to be able to go up the seam, and he's a big body who learned how to block very well from McVay's system. That's a guy really cheap, probably $2 million you could bring in as wide receiver four, or one of my favorites, Laviska Shenault, who has been with Carolina, but he was with Jacksonville originally. This is a guy that has Z potential behind Debo, who can do some of the similar things, screens, fly sweeps. He's kind of a utility type guy and a positionless player. Those are two guys I like that could be cheap that the 49ers could target, but Hunter Renfrow is going to be somebody a lot of teams are going to be interested in because of the grit and the style of play that he has.
Yeah, let's turn our attention to defensive tackle. The 49ers already have Kalia Davis, who has been injured for most of his career so far, the two seasons that he's been around. They also are signing Jordan Elliott, and then they made a trade for Malik Collins from the Texans. They have revamped this defensive tackle. So they've revamped the whole defensive line, but especially defensive tackle, which I thought, you know, because they did have Drake Jackson and Robert Beal Jr. for the edge, but they were pretty well out of, I mean, like if they would have had a game on Sunday, it would have been Javon Hargrave and Kalia Davis. And so they really needed help at defensive tackle, and they've kind of restocked those cupboards.
Yeah, they had to make sure they did that, and it was always known they were going to do that. Now, Kinlaw went to the Jets, and he got a good deal, over $7 million for one season. Congratulations to Javon Kinlaw, but they had to replace it. And I love the Malik Collins deal. Just as Josh is saying, it was an absolutely great move because you're looking at Collins. This is a guy who played six more games over the last three seasons than Arik Armstead, but his production is pretty similar. Both had 11 sacks. Both had close to 30 hits, quarterback hits. He had 35, Collins did. He had more pressure, more tackles for loss. The guy's been fantastic. So you're losing Armstead, but you're bringing in a guy for a lot less money at $10 million that is going to give you similar production as a pass rusher. In fact, he's one of the top six as far as pass rush rate in the NFL from defensive tackle. So you're not losing a lot. This was a gold 49ers move, giving up pick 232 in the seventh round for a really good player. And financially, it made a lot of sense. And yeah, the 49ers had to retool the defensive tackle position. And I thought they did that. In fact, it kind of messed up my mock drafts that I've been doing because I've been going two defensive tackles. Now there's no need for a defensive tackle. That's just a luxury type pick. Filling holes is what they needed to do. Defensive line was the number two thing on my list that they had to go ahead and take care of. So they did that in a big way.
All right. So I said there was going to be a theme with the run defense. How do you see him as a run defender? Hearing really good stuff about him as a pass rusher, but how do you think he holds up as a run defender?
Yeah. I mean, he's got some work, right? I mean, he's definitely better as a pass rusher than he is a run defender, but he's still good. You can watch tape. I've got into a little bit of him. He breaks the double team really well, which is something the 49ers face a ton. I think Armstead overall is probably a better run defender, but I think he's still very sufficient and better than the guys that the 49ers had. He's better than what Kinlaw was last year, so I don't think they're going to lose a lot there. But that's where Jordan Elliott comes in, because Jordan Elliott is a very good run defender. So the 49ers have found a way to get that pass rush they need from the interior defensive line, but also a run defender that can come in and consistently beat double teams. So these guys are going to be gritty. These guys are going to work hard. And the way that Chris Kocurek teaches them to split the double team and win with penetration should suit both of these defensive tackles well. So I think you are getting really good balanced defensive tackle play. And I expect both these guys to elevate their game when they get to San Francisco.
Yeah, and multiple people in the chat talking about how they seem to be not only focused on defense, but they're focused on guys who actually are going to play and guys that have been healthier than some of the ones that the 49ers have just lost. And so that's really good. That's what we want to see, because as great as Arik Armstead has been, the last two seasons, he's missed a lot of games. So if we can get comparable production from someone else who's playing more, that's a big boost to the 49ers defense.
Yeah, most definitely. You have to be available. You have to be able to play. And a lot of people are talking about Hargrave not living up to the expectation. Well, he probably would have been a lot better if he had Arik Armstead next to him the entire time. Well, now he's going to have a rotation of guys next to him that are going to keep some of that pressure off. He's still going to get a lot of attention, but as these guys start having a lot of success, that attention will kind of shift back and forth. So that's what the 49ers needed to do. Expect Hargrave to also have an uptick through this. But once again, health is a key. And you had Armstead on the wrong side of 30, and they go out and get a couple of guys that are on the right side that don't miss football games. Same with Leonard Floyd, does not miss football games. So that's a key for the 49ers. That shift happened a few years ago, and now it's filtered into the defensive line. And that's what they need. They need steady guys that can consistently make plays. And I think they got it now.
Yeah. And they haven't stopped. They've continued to focus on the defense, which kind of makes you wonder, are they going to focus more on the offense during the draft, or are there going to be more offensive moves that they make as free agency goes on? But along those lines, the last time we saw Dre Greenlaw, he went down on a fluke, just accident, coming back onto the field in the Super Bowl. Up to that point, had been playing great. The 49ers defense looked great. They were shutting down Travis Kelce. They were frustrating him to the point that he was going to the sideline and pushing his coach. But then when Greenlaw went down, everything changed. I mean, you saw that heartbreaking video with Fred Warner just crying out when Greenlaw went down. And man, they weren't the same after that. And so you can make the case that they win that game if Dre Greenlaw doesn't get hurt, but you know, we don't want to be sitting here crying about another loss. But they actually did something about this, because my concern has been an Achilles injury to a linebacker. Maybe he comes back early in the season. Maybe it's partway through the season, but is he going to be the same? That's been my concern. And they addressed that by signing Eric Kendricks from the Chargers. He was a team captain, had 117 tackles and 3.5 sacks, even though he played only 15 games. Leader, playmaker. What did you think about this signing of Eric Kendricks?
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, they needed to get somebody, a veteran that they could count on, because you don't know what those young guys are going to be. I mean, yeah, D Winters and Jalen Graham could take a step up, but you've got to make sure you're ready in case you don't have Dre Greenlaw well into the season. And that's been the confusing part, because we rely on doctors, and I've had three different doctors say three different things. I've seen everything from Dre Greenlaw is going to be good in week one. I've seen November, and I've seen he's out for the year. Yeah. And we don't know what that is, but we do know the 49ers needed to make sure they insulated themselves in case Dre Greenlaw is not available. And Kendricks is the perfect guy. This is a guy that has versatility. He's a quality guy in the locker room as well, but he can step in. He can make tackles. He's good against the run, but he can also cover in space. He was with the Minnesota Vikings for a long time, and then last year with the Chargers. So this is a guy that Brandon Staley's really comfortable with. And so now you bring in some Staley guys. And yeah, I know Staley's not the defensive coordinator, but he has a real good feel for who these players are. And so this was a great signing. It's a guy that you can plug and play. And now you don't have to rely on those young players. If you do have to rely on the young players, it's more so for 20 to 25% of the snaps when you're not in the nickel package. So I like this move a lot. I think Kendricks is going to add a lot to the locker room and to the field. And then once Dre gets back, you don't have to worry about thrusting Dre out there for all the snaps. Kendricks can still handle it. You could slowly, methodically get Greenlaw back. And then once you get to playoffs and that playoff time when you have to win, now you have three eligible linebackers where you can just play matchups instead of having to worry about getting a certain guy in there all the time.
Let me ask you this. I'm taking a little veer off of the path here. But you mentioned Brandon Staley. We talked about him last week. He's not the defensive coordinator. We talked about how we still don't know what his role is going to be. And we might not know anything until Kyle Shanahan speaks. And my guess is that Kyle Shanahan will speak at the league meetings in a couple of weeks, but I don't know that for sure, but that's usually what happens. Until we find out, I keep hearing over and over again, he's a Brandon Staley guy. Brandon Staley probably had some influence here. Do you think there's more to this defensive coordinator thing than what we're seeing, or do you think it's just as simple as Staley saying, hey, I like this guy, and they're already looking at him anyway, and so they go with it? Or do you think that he's going to have more involvement in the defense than what we previously had thought?
Well, it's always good to get inside information or firsthand information. You have pro scouts that's their job. They watch these guys. So maybe these guys were already high on the 49ers radar, and then Staley just comes in and confirms what everyone knows, and you go ahead and make the move. But I think what it does too is it shows the relationships that he builds with players. If players are willing to follow him, that is a good indication that people think he's a smart football guy because they want to be around Brandon Staley. I think that's a signal that he knows what he's talking about. I do think he's going to be involved in the defense. To what degree, I don't know. So getting guys that fit whatever scheme they're planning on running, and I think it's going to be a versatile one that is going to kind of combine what Sorensen wants to do with that cover three look compared to the Vic Fangio look that Brandon Staley is going to bring in. And I think there's going to be some unique things with the front that they run. The defensive front hasn't been very good since, I guess, D'Amico left as far as, like, creativity. I didn't think last year was very creative with moving guys around, with stunts, blitz packages. I thought they were more vanilla than I was expecting from Steve Wilks. So I think that's where he's going to have a lot of involvement. So having involvement with the front seven makes a lot of sense to me. Get a linebacker that's really good at blitzing, and then also get Leonard Floyd. So do I think Staley and Sorensen are going to work collaboratively together? Yes. And I think that it's their job to fix this defense and make this defense elite. And I think that's what they're doing. So I do think Staley's going to have some steady influence on what that defense does.
Charlie Warner is one of the players who left in free agency. Obviously, the 49ers aren't going to miss him in the passing game, but in the running game, they very well could miss him because as a tight end too in the running game, he had become a pretty effective blocker. Do you see the 49ers adding a tight end too, or do you think that they're just going to wait for Cam Law or Braden Willis to step up? And can those guys step up? Braden Willis played some last year. Cam Law missed the season with an injury. So we really don't know what to expect from him. But I really think, and I think Josh said this in the chat, would love a dual threat tight end too. I would too, man. I think that Kyle Shanahan wants that. We've seen him like go after that kind of player before, that somebody who not only can block, but somebody who can be like George Kittle and do both and be a receiving threat as well. So what do you think is going to happen there in that tight end two position?
Yeah, I think they're waiting for the market to open up for them to go get a cheap option for tight end two, because they do need to make sure they get a dual threat guy. This has been a problem for a few years now, and they've tried to find a variety of ways to handle it. Last year, they attacked the draft, and they drafted two tight ends, Cameron Latu and Braden Wilson. Both they had really high grades on. I think Latu had the case of the drops, which we don't know what that's going to develop into this year. We just don't know. He had no practice time. He was on the IR. They redshirted him. We don't know what we're going to get out of IR. And I think that unknown from Cameron Latu means the 49ers got to figure something out. And with Braden Willis, I think he's the closest to the 49ers having a Charlie Warner type that has pass catching upside, because I do think he's a better pass catcher than Charlie Warner. So as long as his blocking develops, you might already have your blocking tight end there. But I think you have to make sure you have somebody that could step in and battle for or tight end two against Cameron Latu. I don't think you can count on Latu being that guy outright. So what does that mean? Well, a guy that I'm interested in potentially getting is a guy like Robert Tonyan. I think that he would make a lot of sense. He was $2.2 million against the cap last year for the Bears as a backup role. Very good friends with George Kittle, but is a dual threat. We've seen his upside, how he can have a lot of catches. And you just need a guy that can fill in when George is out. And I don't want that to be Latu right now. I think a guy like that would make sense. They could also address it in the draft, which I think they should. Competition is good. I think the 49ers aren't done addressing tight end. I look for there to be a veteran signing at some point, and then eventually somebody in the draft.
Yeah, so here's the big question, and Jason saying that Willis is better than Latu. That's maybe so.
Right now it has to be.
Yeah, I actually thought that back during, just based on what I was hearing from the some of the beat writers during the rookie mini camp. And some of you know that I'm an Oklahoma guy, so I watch Oklahoma play every game that they play, and Braden Willis would punish people. He could make some plays as a receiver, but there were, like, I've seen him put some people on the ground, and so I kind of liked that pick, but I just think that he just maybe wasn't ready yet. And Anthony said Noah Fant is still a free agent. That'd be a nice pickup for sure.
Yeah, you just wonder what the money's going to look like. 49ers don't normally give and allocate too many resources to tight end as far as salary cap because of George Kittle's number. So they normally try to skimp with tight end two, tight end three. That's why Charlie Warner completely priced out. I'm so surprised Atlanta gave him the contract that they gave him. Congratulations to Charlie Warner, but you're looking for somebody that can do more. And Noah Fant would be a great pickup for the 49ers. I don't think anyone would argue that. You know, somebody like Kobe Parkinson would be a great pickup for the 49ers. I just don't know how cost effective that is. That's why I bring up guys like Robert Tonyan, who are cheap, but could maybe have huge, you know, benefits and pay huge dividends for the 49ers. Somebody that played in the system in Green Bay and had a lot of success, get him back in that system and get him with George Kittle. To me, it almost makes too much sense. And usually when it makes too much sense, it doesn't happen. So we'll see what happens with that tight end two spot.
All right. So the big question, we're 3 days into free agency. I mean, we're only technically I don't even know what time it is, 2:30 your time. So we're really only an hour and a half into free agency, but with all the rumors and things like that, you know how that works. So with the, where we're at right now in 3 days in, have the 49ers gotten better this week?
I think you would have to say they did, because I think the defensive line got a lot better. I think that they really worked on getting guys that were going to be rotational pieces. And you're looking at what you had last year. I mean, they had to go out and they had to get Chase Young. They had to go out and they had to get Randy Gregory. And so I think this time they're making sure they got guys that are rotational pieces. I still think there's work to do to be a lot better. But I think when you were looking at what the roster looked like last week compared to this week, I think they're better in that way. And I think the guys they lost were kind of expected losses. But if you were going to tell me that we were going to lose Kinlaw, but we were going to get the guys that we got, we were going to lose Armstead, we were going to get the guys that we got, I feel like that's probably the best case scenario for the 49ers. And so did I want to lose Armstead? No. And I think that's the one that really kind of hangs on me. But we need guys on the field that can produce, and they got some guys that could do it. I thought the Kendrick signing was fantastic. And if Greenlaw is healthy, that's definitely a better linebacker core. So I think right now they're better. They still have to address cornerback at some point. They need to get that done, and probably something with the offensive line, even if that's just John Feliciano coming back. I think they need to make another move, and we still have the draft to fill the rest of the holes.
Yeah, Josh said nickel corner. That's definitely a need. Jason said that Fant re-signed with the Hawks. Had not heard that, but I wouldn't be surprised. So let me ask you a couple of non-49ers questions. Well, kind of 49ers questions. I did see somebody in the chat. Yeah, Josh asked, does Barkley move to Philly scare you? I certainly didn't like it. But I think they made a couple of really good moves. But yeah, I mean, if you watch ESPN, that move has guaranteed the Eagles to be in the Super Bowl. How did you feel about that?
I mean, I didn't want him end up in Philadelphia. I was actually hoping he was going to head to the AFC and go to the Houston Texans. But you know, I'm not too worried about it, to be honest, because they had really good running backs for two straight years. They had Miles Sanders, and then last year they had DeAndre Swift. They have not been devoid of talent at the running back position, yet they haven't been able to consistently get it done. I think their concerns are less with the run game and more with, can Jalen Hurts get back to the form that he had in 2022? Because last year, the teams figured him out, and the 49ers broke whatever they were doing. They've got to get better. I think they'll be a little bit better this year. New offensive coordinator. They're going to rely on the run game. Things are going to change up a little bit for Jalen Hurts, but no Jason Kelce, no Brandon Graham. There's still some things that they have to get done over there. So I think it probably moved them in a positive direction, but it didn't scare me.
Yeah, losing Jason Kelce was big. And I know that they had already drafted a center who was going to replace him, but he's not going to be Jason Kelce, at least not for a while. So the last question that I have is one that's going to stir some controversy. We saw Mac Jones go to the Jags for, what was it, a seventh rounder or something like that? Six, seven?
Six,
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Six.
Yeah.
If you could get Justin Fields for that as a backup to Brock Purdy, would you do that? Or are you saying, no way, I'm staying away from that guy? Because for me, I was happy that they drafted Trey Lance, partly because I was like, just anybody but Mac Jones. But I really wanted Justin Fields, and I've been surprised that nobody has shown interest in him, because, you know, I mean, maybe the Bears are just asking for too much, but kid's got a lot of talent.
I think he is. Yeah, I think he's a talented guy, and I don't know what that number would look like, that compensation to go ahead and bring him in. We do know the 49ers like having a good quarterback room, and Justin Fields presents some interesting situations where he can use his legs to win. My question is, does Kyle Shanahan believe that Justin Fields can consistently win from the pocket? If he believes he can win from the pocket, then that is a no-brainer for a fifth or sixth, like Josh is saying. If you don't feel that he can consistently win from the pocket, you're running into the same situation you had with Trey Lance, where they felt like that was a guy that you had to completely change the offense for him to be able to have success. In that case, it doesn't make sense. You like your quarterbacks to have similar skill sets as far as in the pocket, so that way you don't have to completely change your offense when one guy goes in and out.
Yeah.
So to me, it has to be, can Fields win from the pocket? If he can, go ahead and make that move. But I think that's part of what the league is trying to decide right now. Who exactly is Justin Fields? Because you see these highlight moments, ooh and all runs, great throws, and you're like, wow, Justin Fields, here he comes. And the next week, it's just inconsistency. Mm-hmm. So I think that is part of the real problem with Justin Fields in the evaluation. The one thing I will say is Kyle Shanahan had an opportunity to make Justin Fields one of his quarterbacks, and he turned it down.
Yep.
So I think that also could weigh into the decision. My expectation would be probably them signing another cheap veteran and potentially going in the draft where there's a couple of young guys that remind me of, you know, guys who the 49ers have had in the past that have a lot of skill set that fit what Kyle Shanahan likes to do.
Any final thoughts before we take off here?
Yeah, I think, you know, besides a couple of moves that they've made, there really hasn't been anything sexy. But I think these are moves that are substance moves. And I think this is the shrewd type moves that the 49ers have to make to stay relevant through this time of Brock Purdy's rookie contract, but also why they have a lot of these top heavy stars. And so when we're sitting back and we're watching, I think we just have to remember that you have to take everything for value. And a lot of people have been weighing in on the defensive tackles and their PFF scores. Don't worry about PFF, because these guys haven't played in this system. If you find a guy that played in this system and they haven't produced, then you can have worries. But the 49ers do things very unique. The wide nine is different than a lot of teams run around the league. And so that attention to what they do is going to change. So I think that PFF is great. I think you can learn some things from that, but I don't think it's the end-all be-all. Tape still beats PFF. And I think the tape shows that these guys are good 49er fits. And I think they're going to give a lot of substance to this team in 2024.
Well, the question of the day was, did the 49ers get better this week? We both believe that they did. And looks like a lot of people in our chat believe the same thing. So thanks for watching. Please take a minute and go, if you're watching this on YouTube, and like the video, subscribe to the 49ers Cutback Podcast and also the 49ers Camelot Show. We would appreciate that because we just want to keep bringing you content. And hey, we didn't say this last week because we hadn't yet decided, but this is now a weekly thing. Every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Central, we're going to be right here talking 49ers all the way through the off season and into the regular season. So please go hit those bells in YouTube, so that way you'll know whenever we go live. And it's been fun, man. We've had a good time talking.
Yeah, it has. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to all the talks, because we're going to have a little bit more free agency, and then it's going to be draft time. There's going to be a lot of holes to fill, and we're going to get a lot of cool questions, I know, from chat. So I'm looking forward to, you know, this show continuing every Wednesday, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And people need to go subscribe to your channel. They need to get you up over 1K. I mean, this is taking too long. Everyone needs to get this done. Mark deserves it. And so people, go get that done. Go give Mark a subscription. You will not regret it.
I appreciate that. And thanks everybody for watching and for all that you're doing, especially for those that jumped in the chat. We appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Have a great rest of your week, everybody. See ya.